First, there was Tuesday. Then, there was Taco Tuesday. Now at Wendy's, there's Takis Tuesday. Get a new Takis Fuego meal, a.k.a. Takis Fuego chicken sandwich, Fuego fries inspired by Takis, a bag of Takis Fuego chips, a small drink, and also a small Frosty classic. Yes, you can get that any day, but on Takis Tuesday, the Frosty is free. Make every Tuesday a Takis Tuesday. Gotta be Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's includes 1 ounce Takis Fuego chips while supplies last. Takis and Fuego trademarks are used under license.
Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast, presented by SportsShoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
We are back for Season 3, and it's going to be a good one.
With the aim of raising the profile of British distance running, we're bringing you more content than ever.
Every week, we'll give you insights into the lives and training of some of the UK's top athletes and coaches,
as well as all the latest updates from the races up and down the country and around the world.
You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcast streaming platforms.
Keep a lookout for our new YouTube channel too, where we're posting workout videos, shoe reviews, and much more.
Stay up to date by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
And if you want to drop us a line, send us an email to info@sundaypodcast.com.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Fresh off a new Irish record of 13.01 over 5,000 metres, we welcome Brian Fay back to the podcast. Brian's just finished up his NCAA career at Washington and returned to train under coach Phelan Kelly at the Dublin Track Club. The Nike athlete talked us through his race in Houston, his plans going forward, and much more. Enjoy.
Okay, Mr. Brian Fay, welcome back. 1301 man now.
Yeah, cheers for having me on. Appreciate it.
Look, everyone's seen on social media, crazy race. What are your kind of early reflections on it? And then we'll get into a bit more of where you're at.
Yeah, honestly, still on cloud nine right here, you know. I'm still going to pinch myself. I did not think I was going to run that fast. I don't think anyone thought I was going to run that fast. So, yeah, on cloud nine. I thought I'd maybe be able to run 13:15 or 13:14 or something like that. And then, like, yeah, I don't know. I was, like, absolutely buzzing after the race and still on cloud nine, as I said. You know, you're still, like, struggling to sleep a little bit. You're like, oh, man, I'm, like, whatever. If I retire tomorrow, I'd be fairly happy with what just happened. So, it's not too bad.
But how do you, you know, for us, I still haven't found a stream or a way to watch it, like a video of it. So how'd the race roll, man? Like, when was it you started to realize, you know, you were going to run something big?
Yeah. Well, I actually don't think there is even a live stream of the race, which is a bit frustrating. Mm. But it was I knew coming into the race that like the field was good, you know, like I think outside of Monaco, this was probably like the only, like probably Morton Games went, but you know, you got to hope that the weather holds out and stuff. But I kind of realized that Houston was probably like going to be teed up for like a world standard just because people are chasing that this time of year, you know, in July and that. And subsequently it was, and like coming in, like the B heat was stacked. Well, you know, not as stacked as the air, but it was still stacked. It's still 1:13:02, you know, still. But Adrian Wills got like great field and that. And then, you know, I just kind of had a feeling that it was going to be quick. And, you know, you come in and on paper, I think I was like 13:16. Most guys are kind of probably a little bit quicker than me. I was probably on more of the slower spectrum of the race and that. And like, I just transitioned back from the NCAAs. I was under, you know, Phelan and Nick Badeau and stuff. And I went up and trained at altitude in Hoyas with the Melbourne Track Club for 4 weeks. And you know, I just did not think, like, it's hard to, because you're changing training system, like, you know, you're going from doing 2 sessions a week back to doing 3 sessions a week, and you're at altitude. And I'd been to Hoyas, like, it was only my second time ever at altitude, and I'd been to Hoyas the same spot like 4 or 5 years prior when I was 19, and like I was training better than that, but I was only running 14 minutes for a 5k then, so I kind of knew I was in obviously better shape than that, but you don't know what type of shape that means in general. And like up there, like Jack Rayner, Stu McSwain and Andrew Coskin were all flying, and like I was doing my best to keep up, but I was kind of getting my doors blown out pretty much most sessions in that. So coming into the race, I kind of knew just like I hadn't dropped much fitness from the NCAAs, and I kind of felt like I was probably in, you know, at least high 13 teens shape end of May. And then, so I was like, oh, probably like worst comes to worst, I'm probably in the same shape, you know? So it was like, oh, like go in, give it a lash. And you know, when we arrived in Houston, like it was so windy an hour beforehand. We're like, oh, this isn't going to be quick. This is going to be a 13:25 race, you know? And then subsequently the wind died down and it was kind of actually perfect for when we just raced. And I think there was 25 guys in the start line, and the gun went off and it just went off with it. And like, it was my first professional race, I guess. I just signed with Nike, which, you know, some buzz. So you're kind of like, you're buzzing to be there. You're like, oh, this is class. You know, I'm a bit of a Nike fanboy before I signed with them. So you're like, oh, sick. I'm wearing the kit and all this. So yeah, gun went off. And like, I went there, I was kind of conservative to start, like 64 first lap, and felt fine. And then like, just kind of got on it. But I was like, the field's so big. I was probably sitting like 12th or 14th. Like I was a bit back off the leaders. And they, like, the first mile went, I think my first K was like 240. Leaders probably went 2 and 238 or so. And then first, I kind of like moved myself up a little bit from the K to the mile, went like 412 through the mile, around like a 61 or something like that in there. And then, like, I remember Phelan, he was watching, he was like, oh, this is a bit hot. Like, Brian, like, slow down, like, calm down there, man. I was like, oh, God, this is actually a bit hot. Maybe 412, didn't expect myself to, maybe 416 or 417 to go through him. But I was like, oh, like, I don't know, but I felt fine. Like, I feel like when you're at altitude, you're kind of working a whole lot harder. And, you know, I was never at that stage where I'm like, oh, like, I'm blowing or I'm working hard here. You know, I just felt okay the whole time. And then, you know, again, I was still on the train, I guess, to 3K, went through in like 7:54. But again, I'm back like maybe in 10th or 11th place. And then people started kind of like, the pace just kind of hits a few people. People are dropping and then you're kind of responding. You're kind of just covering gaps, covering moves and stuff. And, you know, the more and more people you slowly pick off, you're like, oh man, this is like, I'm flying. Like, this is great, you know, and you get more and more confident. Or at least I did as the race went on. And then with like three laps to run, I kind of brought myself back on to maybe sixth or seventh, just behind the leaders, which, like, I'm surprised at myself that I'm up that far. Like, I'm like, oh, grand. And then I think with the two laps to run, the leaders kind of pushed away a little bit from me, and I kind of fell back a little bit. But then I was like, there about 2 weeks ago, like, I think, I don't know if any of you watch me race at all at 5Ks, but for the most part, my, like, the way I kind of run it is that I'm kind of good, you know, first 3K, and then it comes like to the 9th, 10th, 11th lap, and I kind of fall apart a little bit where I kind of fall back. You know, that happened to me at Europeans last year. Even when I ran like 13:16 last year and had a big breakthrough, I was kind of a bit back, and then it's always this big close, and, you know, I close well and it's great. And, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, Phelan and Nick kind of sat me down and were like, look, like, if you can just hold it together and just concentrate, and like, you're still going to be able to close well, but you just need to not fall asleep those last three laps and just stay on the pinch, stay hurting, you know, and it's going to hurt, like, but just stay on it. Mm-hmm. You're going to run something vast. Like, and that's what I was kind of thinking, you know, with two laps to run, rather than trying to sit in and have a big finish, I was just like, oh man, I'm just going after it. If I blow, I blow, but I think I can hold it together. So I'm going. And then, like, kind of caught up, but didn't even catch up. I was still like a second or two behind at the bell. And then I like looked at the bell. I like misread the split. I thought I was like 12:04, 12:05. I was actually like 12:06 going through, looking back. Phelan had the splits, but I was like, oh man, national record 13:03. If I just get like a 58 in me, I'm gone. Like, now I didn't even think about worlds. I didn't think about Olympics or anything like that. I was just like, national record here. And then like just started going and managed to hold together. And then with 200 to run, all of a sudden I'm in the race, you know, I'm like just back off the lads, and I'm like 100 meters to run. I swing wide, go past McGordy. I'm coming up on the Kenyan Cornelius Kemboi, I think his name was. Man, he was so smooth though. He was like chilling, coming down, like saluting me, like, oh my God, like my chin coming out, trying to just get to the line as quick as I can, like, you know. And then came over, and I didn't even, like, you're just racing at that last 100 meters. You're not even thinking about time at that rate. And then I got up and I thought maybe 13:04 or something like that, or 13:05. And then it was 13:01. And I was like, man, that's outrageous. Like, I started screaming, and Phelan was screaming, and I'm screaming, like, I'm coming over the line. And I literally, like, I'm ripping my number off. I'm like, let's go. And I come up and jump on him. And he's like, he's screaming. And like, you can imagine, it's like kind of it's not a big meet in, like, it's a really good meet, but it's not like that packed or anything like that. And it's kind of quiet. And there's Phelan and I absolutely losing it, just like celebrating, and like everyone looking at us being like, oh, what's going on there? Like, that's a bit weird, you know? But I was just on cloud nine after that. I was like, oh, that was, I did not expect it at all. I don't think anyone did. I don't think Phelan did. I don't think any of the guys I trained with did. I was like, man, it was just out of the blue. I was like, class, you know?
Oh mate, you had a grip. What, you painted such a good picture there for us. Yeah. And I think every listener as well, man. So mate, just a quick one. What altitude location is this? I haven't heard of it.
Hoyos del Espino. It's not, I don't think Nick is the only guy that's
there. You guys have snuck off somewhere. Where is it?
It's like, it's 2 hours west of, so Nick, you know, he loves doing camps where there's not much distractions, where like no one else is. But yeah, he doesn't like going where, and I can get it. Like, you don't want to go to like St. Moritz or anything like that, where it's like, it's kind of like everyone's doing stuff and you're kind of looking at other people, what they're doing. It's like you just go, you kind of chill out, you do your own thing and stuff, and it's kind of nice. And like, it's just, it's hard training. It's like you're running up and down hills all the time, but it's actually good trails. You know, I actually like the trails, and it's maybe 1600 meters up at elevation. We run easy at like maybe 1700, 1800. Mm. And then you can come down to Avila, which is an hour away, just to do sessions like at 1100 meters, which is what we were doing on Tuesdays. And, but I like, it's a good spot. It's like, not like they don't speak any English there, like small Spanish town, probably population of about 400 people. You know, it's, like it's fairly nomadic living for a couple of weeks, like, you know. And obviously when you're a young lad in the middle of July, you're like, God, I could picture better places to be. Mm. Even though it's like when you're up there, it's actually stunning scenery and stuff, but you get just a little bit cabin fever and that. But it is like, obviously, you know, around, like I'd never really done altitude before. Like I did it like in Hoyas like four years ago with the Melbourne lads, and that was the first time I ever linked in with them. And you know, I just wasn't strong enough at the time. Like they were all running 13 teens, you know, or like 335 or quicker, as I was like a 14 minute guy, 343 guy, you know. So I was kind of always at the back door a little bit, but, and then like I didn't know what to think even going up again, being like, but you're just like, ah, training, you know, I'll be grand. And then I came down, like I blew in the Friday, the day before the race, and then ran so well. And I was like, wow, this is what everyone does altitude. This is class, man. You know, I'm going to do this again, you know. But yeah, so it was great. I was buzzing with it.
Yeah, man. And you obviously mentioned the Nike contract in there. What a way to sort of announce it on Instagram after that race as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think it was like, you know, you come off the NCAAs, and I had a bad NCAA outdoors. Like I really, probably one of the worst, like my NCAA indoors was fairly bad as well. And you're kind of in limbo. And I think most NCAA guys are kind of in that situation where you come out, you're not allowed to talk about age or about contracts or anything until you leave the NCAAs. So you feel like this pressure almost, like, oh, like, do I need to sign somewhere or whatever and that. And then, like, yeah, I guess, like, in the first week coming off, you don't know what to think. And then, obviously, something worked out with Nike, which was great because they're the best guys in the game. So you're like, oh, this is sick, you know, great to sign with them. And, yeah, then that kind of, like, you feel like once I signed actually probably, like, a week before the race, and you're kind of like, oh, pressure's off now. It doesn't matter what I do, like, you know. And then you're not as, like, worked up coming into the race or anything like that. And I feel like that was probably playing on my mind a little bit. You know, you're just kind of worried about like just like where you're at coming out of the NCAAs and stuff, you know, because it's just a bit of a transition period and it feels very immediate when you leave, even though you probably like could take as much time as you want to kind of figure things out. But yeah, no, I was buzzing to sign with Nike. You know, I think they're, I'm just a Nike fanboy. I always was, like, you know, I always wore all their shoes and stuff. So like I was buzzing. And then obviously coming into the race, I didn't want to post anything because you're just like, just keep it low key. Don't want to put any pressure on myself, like, you know. And then everything worked out, and like I guess it was a good way to announce it. Yeah, so it was grand.
Yeah, I got to ask, mate. Was there a cheeky bonus for that run, or was it sub 13 written into the contract? Did you just miss a bonus?
Yeah, no. There was a bonus, so it was grand. I was kind of buzzing with it, so it was grand. Honestly, though, like it's great to be earning it. Like obviously that this is the dream. Like, you know, 6 years ago, if you asked me, like I would have bitten your arm off to be able to earn money doing something that I love and stuff, you know. But like it's not like, I don't think any of it, like I'm certainly not in the sport to like earn huge money. Like you just want to run as well as you can. And obviously to get the Olympic standard and get the world standard and a national record, you know, I was buzzing with that. I think that was that's really what put me on cloud nine and stuff. And like even like next year now, it's like, oh, the pressure's off. Like, I can just chill out and stuff, you know? Don't have to try. Well, like, obviously, you want to be running faster, but it's like, I feel like you can't force anything. And I feel like, you know, sometimes you come into big championships and you feel like you have to force it to try and hit a standard and stuff like that. As I think, like, now I can kind of, like, plan my training camps accordingly and plan my training a little bit more efficiently where I'm not, like, chasing times or anything like that next year. So it's kind of nice.
Yeah, man. And when we spoke to you last, you know, you were, even then, I think a year ago, 18 months ago, you were pretty sure you were going to obviously just rejoin Phelan and the guys at Dublin Track Club and Melbourne Track Club. So was that quite nice to, you know, you didn't have that limbo period. I think a lot of students have, you know, leaving, you know, Andy Powell.
Yeah, well, look, like, I think honestly, I was considering staying under Andy next year. And I think just with the feasibility of like running a college program, it didn't really work out. I was always going to transition home at some stage and come back under Phelan. I feel like, you know, Phelan you know, 6 years, 7 years ago, took me on as a coach me. And like the plan was always, I know it's like you sell this idea of like, oh, we're going to be great. You know, we're going to reach new limits. We're going to hit a high in that. And you just bought when you're 18, you're like, yeah, we are, like, this is going to be class. Like, you know, and I remember when we were like getting ready for a junior Eurocross, and I think I came like 48th, but like Phelan's like, yeah, we're going to take on Jakob Ingebrigtsen one day. And I'm like, yeah, we are. This is just when Jakob was like breaking out. He was like the top junior in Europe. He wasn't exactly what he was doing today, but like, you just, I bought into Phelan, and Phelan bought into me, you know? And I think, you know, I'm just a very, like, I don't know, loyal person. I'm like an emotional person. And like, I was always going to be like loyal to Phelan, you know, and try and make like, and come in and believe in the program. And like, Andy's going so well, and the group is just, I've always been a part of it, of building it up and being a part of something. And that's kind of cool. And I'm like, yeah, cool. Like, I was all the way coming back and just being able to get after it with Phelan, you know? So it's cool.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. I'm also,
well, gonna... I will say, like, you know, I think a year ago when I talked to you, like, I wasn't, you know, you're in America for a year, you don't really, you know, consider staying there, you know, you're kind of, but then you do another year and then you kind of have a little bit more, you know, commitments to, you know, your personal life out there and stuff, and you're gone a little bit longer from home. You know, Andy and Chris and everyone in the program has been like so good to me and everything. Like, I was going really well running wise that, like, obviously I was considering, I was, you know? And like, just in terms of like my life, but like, I left Ireland during COVID, where it's like you're living at home, it's just kind of bleak. And then you come over to America and it's just like great autonomy and great independence and just a good life. And then you're like, oh, I'm going to leave all this, you know, which is not, it's a bit daunting a little bit, you know, because you just feel like you've just found your foothold, I guess, out there, you know, and then everything kind of changes. So I did obviously consider staying there. And honestly, I probably will still head out and link in a little bit with the Washington guys. Like, I think they're all good lads and stuff, and it's a great culture there, good training and stuff. And, you know, Andy, like, I think if he could, he would, like, have kept me on and stuff. But look, I think I'm buzzing to be back with Phelan and stuff, and back with Nick, so it's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and can you reflect a bit on kind of the things Andy's been doing? Because we saw one of the craziest NCAA miles ever indoors.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was funny. So for that, it was like, I remember coming back from, I'd raced indoor in Boston, ran a national record indoor 13:16, and then came and raced Eurocross a week later and just couldn't get my jet lag down and didn't race too well. And then was in Ireland for a couple of weeks and then came out in January. And like, yeah, like, I think we all knew at the start of last year that we had a very, you know, like, on paper, you know, if everyone does like as good as they can, you know, we're gonna like absolutely pop off. And, you know, and I think we all knew that, like, okay, if we can just like rally and like really lock in, we're gonna be good, like, you know. And I think everyone, like we have such a good training environment where everyone's kind of pushing each other on. And then you're looking at like guys like, you know, Joe is at the time was flying in training. I was kind of, me and Joe kind of were doing different, I'm doing more strength oriented training as Joe was doing more like middle distance training and stuff. And I remember, like, I'd be looking at him and I'd be like, oh yeah, I could do that. And he'd be looking at me doing like the tempos. He'd be like, yeah, I could do that. You know, so it's like, you're constantly looking at other guys being like, yeah, like if they could do it, I could do it, you know? And then that kind of brings everyone on. And I think I remember coming into that, like where we had 8 guys sub 4 in the first time we did it in the Dempsey in Seattle. And, you know, we knew we could all do it. Like, everyone had been close to 4, broken for Nathan had just broken it like 2 weeks prior. You know, it was just about all of it clicking on the day. But we had like Johnny Gregoric and Sam Preku train under Andy to like pace the race. And it was just, we had a plan, like perfectly smooth, everyone slot in and do the job. And I remember Andy was like talking to me. He was like, okay, like it's going to go out, we're going to run like 58, and then I need you to close in 55 last lap or 54 or something. And I was like, if my math serves me right, that's going to be about 3:52. And I was like, I don't know, man, that seems a bit hot for me, you know? And then subsequently, we kind of did it. You end up being like 55 first lap, then like a 59, and then I closed in a 55 maybe again, and then ran 52, and Joe just pit me, and then everyone else. And like, Nathan was just behind me. Nathan's the type of character, though, that he really responds to like competitions, you know? You get him riled up before the race. I'm like a little bit more of a beta when it comes to racing, you know? I need to be just calm and chill and, you know, keep it easy, as he's like really like ready to go, like, you know? And you get him riled up and he's like, yeah, I'm going to race these guys. You know, he has a chip on his shoulder, which is cool. But no, yeah, it was classic. I think after that race, everyone was buzzing. We were like, man, we just did something. And then I think from that there on, it just kind of, I don't know if snowballed is the right word, but like just everything just got rolling. Like, you know, you just have great momentum and then people are just running fast every week, running well. And then you're just so confident then you're a little bit more momentum with you. And then you come to training and everyone's buzzing and it's good. It's a good atmosphere. It's good crack. Like everyone's having a laugh. So it's the everyone's just working together on cloud nine, having a good time. So it's good.
It's monstrous. And I think this sparks the conversation that, yeah, me and Ollie often talk about. Are some of the best coaches in the world wrapped up in the NCAAs? And I guess rightly so, because that's where the money is as well. But do you ever think if Andy Powell had a professional group, what he could do with them? We started to see Mike Smith coach some really top professionals now as well.
Yeah. I think Andy could do it. Yeah, obviously, I think, in my opinion, Andy's one of the best coaches in the world, you know, and I think he has a great, he's great at judging where someone's at and then periodizing them really well into their races. So they like whatever fitness there is that they hit to the best of their ability on the given day of their fitness at the given time, you know? And I think like, unfortunately with the way the NCAA system works is that you're kind of racing so much to kind of hit like qualifiers or to like race conferences and then eventually race championships. So it doesn't mean that you have the same like structure of racing, I guess, is like the professional realm where like, let's say if you're a professional just trying to make the world champs, you have like very evenly paced races where you can go in, just hit a time and then you move on to the championships. And it's like a whole lot less, it's more time trialing, a whole lot less kind of racing, you know, and like championship racing at least. And I think if Andy was in that situation, if it was like, you know, the focus had shifted from NCAAs to, you know, a professional sense, I think he'd be very good at being able to hit guys for, you know, hitting times and standards and performing well at major championships. I think though, like, I think Mike Smith's doing a great job of balancing the two. Like, I wouldn't envy trying to split. I think if you want to be good at the end, it's best to focus on the NCAAs. And if you want to be a good professional coach, it's best to a good professional coach. I think some guys do a great job of balancing. I think Andy has done a great job with like Sam Preko, who's a volunteer assistant coach, and he's taking on Kieran Lum now as a volunteer assistant coach as well. So like he has done, but I think there's still a great emphasis on the team. And like, you know, I think he's right as well to kind of have it that where there's not like, if he had a professional group along with the, you know, a college group, it would probably take away from the like what you have, that culture, that group. And it's like it is a tight knit group, and it is, and like it's full on, and it's a lot to take on. And you know, I'm sure I was a lot of work. If you asked Andy, he was like, yeah, he wasn't the easiest to coach, but he would be well suited in the professional round, but I think he's doing a good job and a great job. And I think, in my opinion, he's the best coach in the NCAAs. So it's all working out.
Yeah. What do you mean by that, mate? Like, why aren't you easy to coach?
Oh no, I'm fine to coach. Like I'm easy enough. I'm just like, I feel like some lads are very much I'm great in training and stuff. I just feel like some lads, you know, your typical distance runner type is probably a little bit, you know, likes his running a little bit more quiet, as I'm probably a little bit louder and a little bit more eccentric with my actions, I guess. So I'd say like sometimes you're just like, what is that guy doing, you know? But no, I think like I'm probably a bit more of I think you get different personalities on the team, but I'm probably a bigger personality than most. So I think I can imagine it'd be a little bit more, you know, just gonna be self-aware here, you know, I'm judging it's probably a little bit much for some, but no, I don't think I'm difficult to coach or anything like that. I think I deal with a good bit of anxiety as well when I race, or like just in my life in general. And then obviously you kind of have to try and balance that with your racing and stuff. So you just kind of have to learn to manage that and stuff. So I can imagine as a coach, you know, you're worrying about my situation and stuff and that when, you know, other things are going on and that. But yeah, no, I'm not actually difficult to coach or anything like that. I'm just not a chiseled individual, I would say, you know.
You bring the energy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And talk about how it's going to work with sort of both Nick and Phelan kind of in your corner now going forwards.
Yeah. Well, like, so obviously, you know, I'm like, Phelan's my coach. which should be grand. Like, it works out well because I'm back home and, you know, Fenham's good. Like, the Melbourne Track Club guys are very good, though, you know, and I think you always need to have guys around you that are going to bring you on and stuff. And, like, we have that here in Ireland, but you're never going to say no to having, you know, more training partners that are better than you. And, like, you know, I think if I can link in and come down to Australia a little bit and train with the guys and stuff and do camps and that, I think it elevates my own performance. It elevates, like, Andrew's performance, and I'm hoping it elevates there. You know, you push on each other, you know, which is good. Even though, like, everything is great here, and it's you know, great to be a part of, like, such a good group, and Andy's fine and all, but it's always nice to have, like, more. And also, just for me life, I'd love to check out Australia, just see what it's like. It's obviously a little bit better weather than here in Dublin, which has been raining the last week, which isn't great, but yeah.
Yeah, I bet you were glad you didn't do the Morton Games over Houston, man, because
the option came up as well. It was said to me, like, oh, do you want to race Morton? Obviously, it's a home meet. Like, I live right around the corner. I'm, like, probably a mile and a half down the road from Morton. And I was like, yeah, maybe. But, like, judging by the last couple of years of weather, I don't know if the 5K is going to really shape up, you know. And then, as I said, I kind of had a feeling that Houston was going to go fast and stuff. And I didn't think I was going to run as fast as I was prior to the race or anything like that. But it subsequently, like, worked out so well, like, which was great.
Mate, yeah, when I looked at the start list for it, I just thought, man, that is the best of the rest. And I think it's even better for guys like yourself, because there was no, I know you had that one Kenyan in there, but there was no Kenyans who can run 12:40 who were just going to ping off the front and upset the rhythm, you know. You nailed it. Who's got the faster PB, you or McSwain now? Is McSwain 13:01 as well?
Oh, he's quick. Oh, he's easily quicker than me. Yeah, he's 12:56. Honestly,
is he?
I think he dusts me 10 times out of 10 if we... Yeah, he'd be like, Stewie is like, when I went up and trained with him, like, he's like a different animal. Like, he's so smooth running the whole time training, and he got me almost every single run, every single train. And I was a good bit behind, you know. I'm not on the same playing field as him at all, you know. So maybe one day I'll get up there, but no, he's a phenomenal athlete, you know. And that's what I mean, like, you know, you want guys like that around you that you can kind of push on from, you know. And to be fair to Andy, like, I think Andy would run a very fast 5k right now, you know, because he, like, in all, like, in everything, in tempoing and hills and all our interval sessions, he was ahead of me, you know. So he's in really good nick as well. Obviously, he showed that last week running 3:30. So, but you kind of need guys like that are around you, that are better than you, that can kind of bring you on, you know. I think that's probably why I ran so well, just that I had guys that were, you know, not dropping me, but you're also, it keeps you honest, but also, like, you know, you're just, you need that, like, you don't want to be the there's always guys that are better than you. You need to be brought on by guys that are, yeah, just touch at you, you know.
I mean, I was going to ask you kind of what the difference was, because you finished up your NCAA season, and perhaps the actual NCAAs was a little bit disappointing for you. I mean, you could probably answer that better than me. Yeah. But, like, I was going to ask what changed between then and obviously that 13:01, but I feel like you've already said it. You just nailed a good altitude camp.
Yeah. Now, honestly, I think I just had a very bad race at NCAAs. And I think, I was in good shape before that. I think, like, you know, I had early doors at, like, slow play the season. And I think, honestly, Andy Pell and I, our plan was always to like peak later in the seat, like post NCAAs, you know, and still hit a good NCAAs, but it was always like going to run well in July and August, you know, just with like world champs coming up and the possibility of that being on the cards. And, you know, I'd done a good bit, but like, I probably was aerobically quite fit, but I just don't think, like, in the NCAAs, like, I raced one 5K outdoor, like, first race of the season, got my regional mark. Then you start, like, you do your Pac-12s, then you do your regionals, and it's always just championship racing. So there's never the opportunity to run, like, outrageously fast, I think. I think it, like, if it aligns, it might work out. But, like, you're expected, like, I think I ran 13:21, like, and I'm 2 or 3 weeks off taking a break after indoors, you know. So you're not, expecting yourself to set the world alight or anything like that, you know. And then, as I said, like, just the outdoor champs just didn't really work out for me. Like, we raced and it was probably like 38 degrees Celsius down in Austin, and I just did not do well in the heat at all. Like, and we were not running fast at all. Like, we were running 70s or something like that, like something that you do easy for a tempo, you know. And I just blew right up. I think Nico Young took on the lead before last round at 60, and I tried to go with it, and I couldn't, you know. I just blew, and then I'm just working hard. And honestly, I probably was working hard running 14.11 in Austin than I was running, you know, 13.01 there in Houston. But I think I was always in good nick. It was just unfortunate that I just had a bad race. And look, I think that's part and parcel of life, you know, and of running. You have good races and you have bad races, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it's just frustrating. Obviously, my last two championships have just been poor, and like I can't really, like I'm saying, the heat and stuff, but I can't really blame anyone but myself for that, you know. And just accept, look, like it was a bad race on my behalf, and you just move on. And look, like obviously I wanted to finish the NCAAs on a bit of a higher note, considering I was, you know, the NCAA lead in the five, and I'd been performing so well, you know, in terms of time trialing before that. I never really hit any NCAA championship well. But look, that's life. You know, if you told me that I'd have a bad NCAA outdoors and I'd run a national record in July, I'd probably be like, yeah, cool, I'd take that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what's life going to look like for you the next few months now? Because obviously you've hit your standard, you can prep for Worlds. What does the pro life look like on a day-to-day basis?
I wish I could tell you. I don't actually know. I'm trying to just figure out what I'm doing in 2 weeks. You know, I think I'll make it like, at the minute, I'm kind of dialed in for Worlds, so I go back on a training camp on just straight after a national championship. So I race nationals in 2 weeks, and then training camp leading into Worlds, and then I race Worlds, and then I'll probably race in early September as well, just a few track races. But like I couldn't tell you what the plan is post that, you know. I'm not too focused, or haven't really worried about it. I think, as I said, you know, when you leave the NCAAs, you feel like, you know, you have to make a decision on where you are next year or what's going on with your life and stuff. And it all feels very immediate, but then you kind of realize that like you have a bit of time to make these decisions. And I think the nature of, you know, professional running, at least, is that it can be quite transient. You know, you do bounce around a little bit for meets and for different camps and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you kind of just have to go with the flow and just see your cards are dealt and go with it, you know. And look, I'll make a plan and hopefully have a good plan in place for next year come the end of this season after Worlds. But certainly at the minute, I'm just kind of focused on getting myself to the World Championships and trying to be competitive. I think, like, if I look at it, like, I have a chance, probably an outside chance, but a good chance of making the final, you know, after my 13.01. If I can perform as well as I did there, you know, I'm certainly in with a sniff of making a world final, which, you know, I don't think anyone would have expected 2 weeks ago, you know. So if I can just get everything right and just show up. And like, I think, you know, obviously the goal initially was to make the world champs. Now that I've done it, it's to be competitive at the world champs. And look, I don't think I'm going to be setting the world light winning any medals or anything like that, but I do think, you know, I can be competitive for what my own level is, which is to try and, you know, compete in the heat, you know, and be able to try and make a final, you know? So I think if I can do that, I'd be happy.
Has it surprised you? Obviously you surprised yourself in a way running 13.01. Yeah. Has it surprised you? So many other people have done the same, like even that race you were in, like how many boys were running 13.05? Like they moved the standards up and we all thought, you know, it was going to be impossible to hit it. People are nailing it. I think 20 guys, more than 20 have got that standard now.
Yeah. I don't know. Honestly, like, I feel like every year, just everything seems to get better and better in athletics. You know, people are just running faster and faster. And you're like, man, like if you look at whatever about the 5K, if you look at the 15, I remember thinking the 15 for Tokyo, there's so many guys running 335, you know, or 334. And now there's so many guys running 332, 333, you know. And I'm like nothing surprises me at this rate. You just kind of like, you I think when I first started looking at the results, you're like, oh man, that's outrageous. Like that can't be right. And then now you're just like, you don't expect that. You're just like, yep, cool, that's fair enough, you know. So I think nothing surprising me these days, you know. But it's great to see that there's such a high standard at the minute in athletics. I feel like that was a big conversation over COVID where people are like, you know, they're like, oh, like why are people running so fast? Maybe it was because they had a break in COVID, meant they could train. Obviously the introduction of spikes and stuff and new shoes and just people having better knowledge to train. But I just feel like, I don't know, I think, you know, the sport itself has become more popular and, you know, more people are chasing. And I feel like as more and more people run fast, more and more people are like myself, 2 years ago, I was only a 13.44 guy, you know, and you're looking at that and you're looking at guys that are running fast. You're like I can do that. You know, if I just put my mind to it, I can do that, you know. And I think more people are accepting that and are kind of doing that, you know, which is good. I think it's great to have. And like you watch guys run, like I'm sure loads of guys are looking at me run 13.01 and being like, sure, I bet him last month, 2 months ago. I can do that.
Mm.
Those guys will push on and run fast as well, you know? And I think that's kind of, you know, people are just coming on because the more and more people run fast, the more it encourages other people to run fast. So it's good. Like, it's what you want.
Yeah. And I think, is there a little bit of a different mentality on the circuit going into these races? People are, like you said, in Houston, everyone just slots in and, you know, no one's hassling, I think.
Yeah. I think so. Like, I think, honestly, I feel like European racing is probably a little bit more messy than NCAA racing. I feel like collegiately, maybe that the depth probably isn't as, obviously the top half of the NCAA is probably isn't as strong as like the top half of, like, let's say that Houston 5K and stuff. Mm-hmm. So like, it probably strings out a little bit quicker in the NCAAs. Is that like, especially in like the 1500 meters in Europe, it's like a whole lot more messier. I think people are always fighting for position and are probably have a little bit more of a competitive instinct. I think it's good though. Like, even in my head, like, you're going into the race and you're like, look, this is my job now. I'm professional. This is what I do. Like, you know, so this is business. Like, you go in and I'm executing business, you know. It's not, and look, it was an emotional high, but I need to come down from that. And naturally it will be, but you kind of need to just accept, look, this is just part and parcel of what I do, you know. And I think a lot of guys kind of operate like that. They're just going in like, I'm just going to hit a standard and move on, you know, which is cool. It's cool to be a part of that. Cool to be a part of like a professional circuit, like even lining up there. And you know, whenever you line up against pros or you see the professional kit prior to signing professionally, you're always like, well, prior probably the NCAAs, it didn't really like intimidate me much when I was racing pros in the NCAAs, but you're always like, you're looking at them, you're like, oh man, these guys are better than me, they're gonna win. And then subsequently the last 2 years you get a little bit better, and now I'm one of those guys in the pro kit, you know. So it's kind of, you're looking, you're like, okay, I'm rubbing shoulders with these guys, but I've every right to be here, you know. I've earned me stripes to get here, you know. So it's nice to be in that position.
And training wise going into Worlds, is it more of the same, or is it a bit more kind of championship focus?
Probably more of the same, if I were to guess. Like, I feel like you can't force anything, and even like my training the last 4 weeks, it was good, but I didn't force anything. I didn't, like, you know, yeah, look, there was a few sessions that I ran proper hard in that, and you know, got my doors blown off by Stu McSwain and the likes, but I was never like trying to force like my mileage or force my easy runs or anything like that. And I think going into Worlds, I probably won't try and force it either, you know. I feel like, especially after that result, like, I just got to ride the height, you know. And you know, you just keep, you're on good momentum, so just keep the good times rolling, as they say, you know. Just keep going in that, you know, rather than trying to change things up and get too like worked up about what can I do better or what can I do different, you know. I think it's, everything's working well, and I'm just going to keep on that trend, hopefully, you know.
We got to ask, mate, we're just super fans, was there a specific workout you hit and you were like, okay, that means something good?
Yeah, honestly, no. Like, I wish I could say that there was. Like, I feel like, and like, Phelan was, well, I was chatting to Phelan about this the other day. I feel like, you know, like the 13-1, yeah, it was great and stuff, and like the camp was great and stuff. But like, it's just the years of accumulation of training that you kind of, that gets you there, you know. I feel like on the camp, we had a few good sessions where we did like, you know, 20x400, or at least five sets of 4x400s off a minute between sets, and you start with like 15 seconds recovery, 30 seconds recovery, 45 seconds recovery, and then 60 seconds recovery, and then 75, I think. So like, we start at like 66s, 67s, then like 64s, 61, 62, 60s, and then 58s. I didn't make it to the last set though. I was running like 64s in that last set, but like, and you're at altitude as well doing this, you know. So it's like, that was a hard session. Honestly, the hardest session I did was the second week there. I did, and like, this was after I had the pep talk where I was like, you just need to hang in there when the going gets tough, you just hang on it, like, forget about blowing up, like, just. And that's what I was trying to like implement into the session. And like, Stewie, he's just chilling on all these sessions. But we did like a mile 12 2.6s times two, and the mile was like ran evenly in 68s, I think it was. And then we did a 1200 where we go 68, 65, 62, and then 2.6s in like going 32, 30, 28. And like, I don't know, it probably sounds easier. Like, we took a lap jog, I think, between, it's so like 2 minutes between the mile and the 12, and then a minute, it could have been, or yeah, a minute or 30 seconds between the sixes, and then another lap jog between sets. But like, by the end of the first set, I was cooked, and like, I went to the mile and I was just hanging on for dear life in the mile. And then I think I just did a K of the 1200 because I was just on death's door, and I'm like trying to hang up, like you hit whatever, like a 34, then another 65, and then like I'm just trying my best to run a 61, and I went after it and just blew up. I like crawled home last 100 and came back and ran 2 sixes in like 91 or 92, I think. And I came over the line and I just vomited everywhere, puked everywhere. I was like, yeah, I had to peel me off the track. I'd ran so hard, like, you know, which is funny because, and like we do, like on Thursdays, we do tempo work and we take our lactates and, you know, it's a little bit more controlled and stuff. But I feel like at the minute you have an awful lot of gurus that are, you know, they're like, oh, you got to train easier. You got to do just do threshold and all this stuff, you know? And I think certainly coming from both like Andy Powell's training, which is really good training, and this training, which is slightly different, you know, there's plenty of ways to skin a cat. And I think like you can work hard and train as well, you know, and like you get results. I think if it was easy, you know, everyone would be doing it, you know, but yeah, I certainly did work hard in some sessions. Yeah. You know,
I think you nailed it there, buddy.
Yeah. I think that's Jakob's secret. He makes everyone think it's threshold all the time, but no one knows what you do.
I think, yeah, look, I do believe this, you know, we do our lactates on a Thursday and I believe in threshold and doing heart rates and all that. But like, I think there's no substitution for working hard and training hard, you know, and you got to train hard to do well, you know. I wish it was easy, you know, but I don't think it is, you know. And look, like obviously you want to be doing enough training where you can sustain it for most of the year. You know, you want to be running enough miles where you're not like breaking down after 3 weeks. You want to be able to do it all year in, year out. And some periods of training are going to be harder than others just when you're coming in, periodizing into championships and that. But yeah, I think it's a complete hoax to say that you're just going to train easy, you know, and just do a bunch of lactates and tempos, you know. Yeah, you got to acclimatize your body to running fast as well, to like running hard, like at that pace. And certainly for me in that 5K, like I trained hard. And when it came to the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th lap for when it mattered, for when not to drop off, I was still there and still on it. And like my body needed to like be acclimatized to that effort and acclimatized to running that pace at that fatigue, you know? So I do think you do need to run hard in sessions, you know? At times, you know, obviously there's times to take it easy and times to... You go hard, yeah. Yeah.
For sure, man. Look, you've kind of already admitted you've been a Nike fanboy since day. So what is your shoe rotation now you're kind of fully in with them?
Yeah, well, before I went Nike, I was wearing a lot of I always wore Pegs, like always Pegs. But actually I got sent a pair of Vomeros, and I've just been wearing Vomeros for all my easy stuff. And then so obviously for the last 2 years, I was in Adidas shoes because Washington was an Adidas school. And, you know, you're running the Adidas Pro 3s, which are good. But then I put back on the pair of the Vaporflies. I was like, wow, these are nice shoes. I was like, oh, these are good, you know. I don't even know if they're a new version from 2 years ago, but I was like, wow, these feel good, like, you know. And then, like, the Dragonflies as well. I can't, well, just around 1301 of them. So, like, buzzing with them, you know. But they're kind of like I haven't tried the Alphas on yet, just the Vaporfly wearing Vomeros mostly. I wore the Invincibles, I think they're called. They weren't around 2 years ago, and I started wearing them. I like them. They're kind of soft, so they save your legs a little bit, you know. But I'm kind of more of a fan of like I was always a fan of like the heavier, like even though Pegs aren't that heavy or Vomeros aren't that heavy, but just for me, easy stuff, I like probably a little bit of a heavier shoe, you know, which is in this case the Vomeros, you know.
Nice, man.
Yeah, good, man. Well, look, it's been great to catch up with you, and we wish you all the best.
Yeah, cheers for having me on.
Next time you'll be 12:45 guy when we have you on, mate. So
yeah, who knows, you know.